Jennifer or Jen. I got told that I asked which one, and they said if she likes you, it's one, and if she doesn't, it's the other. They didn't tell me which was which, so that's a neat little story with a humorous little twist at the end. But I think there's something we can take away from it this morning more than just a little lighthearted chuckle. You know, I think we all at various times in our lives feel a little bit like Wally did up on that stage. We kind of have a sense that something's just not right, that things aren't going the way they're supposed to be going. But like everyone else in the theater that night, we feel like there's really not much we can do about it. The script's already been written. The ending's already been decided. Reminds me of one of my favorite movies called Groundhog Day. It's a story about a rather self-centered weatherman named Phil Connors, who finds himself stuck in the tiny little town of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. And he's reliving the same day over and over and over again. Every morning at 6 a.m., Phil wakes up, and it's February 2nd, Groundhog Day. And no matter what he does during that day, whether he goes to the local cafe and gorges himself, or gets chased down the train tracks by the police, or robs the bank, or steals the world-famous groundhog Punxsutawney Phil and drives off a cliff, the next morning at 6 a.m., Phil wakes up in his hotel bed, right back where he started, as if the events of the previous day didn't happen. Perhaps that's how you feel about your life sometimes. You feel stuck. You feel like whatever you do has no real effect on the big picture reality of your life. You feel like you are doomed by destiny or some other invisible and unchangeable force. You think it's inevitable that the script will play out the same way again and again like it always has before. You will make the same kind of mistakes, and you will suffer the same kind of misfortunes. You are a prisoner of your own desires and the author of your own demise, and there's nothing that you or anyone else can do about it. It all just seems so hopeless. But then, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only, who came from the Father full of grace and truth. God became flesh and dwelt among us, and suddenly there is hope. As though the stage lights were turned up to 11, we behold the glory of the sun. Blinded by the lights, we finally see the world as it really is. We see that we are not destined to follow some cosmic script for our life, but there's hope for something else. We see that we are not doomed to be a slave to our sinful desires, but there's hope for something more. We see that we are not defenseless against the pain and suffering this corrupt and broken world attempts to inflict upon us, but there is hope for something better. And in that moment, just like Wally, we realize we can rewrite the script. We can say the kinder words. We can do the right thing. We can be the better version of our own selves because God chose to become flesh and live with us. And that gives us a hope for something that is new and unlike anything we've ever seen before. You see, to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, and he gave the right to become children of God. Children not born of natural descent or human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. You are no longer on your own. You are no longer left to your own devices. But you can be a child of God. You can be cared for by God. You can be loved by Him, empowered by Him, protected by Him. And that changes everything and turns your life into a whole new ballgame. You know, I'm still kind of getting used to this idea of being the new guy. It's still kind of settling in, but that's kind of got me thinking a lot last few weeks about what exactly it means for someone or something to be new. And given the holiday spirit, I thought maybe it would be good for me to embark on a new search for the meaning of Christmas. Now, the problem with trying to address a topic like Christmas that's very common and familiar is trying to find a way to say something that's new and meaningful. The Christmas story is fairly well known. You have Mary and Joseph, you have a baby and a manger, you have shepherds and angels, and you have wise men and a star. And that's pretty much the gist of it. But as I considered the Christmas story a little further, I realized that it's actually an ironic mix of the new and the traditional. Perhaps the epitome of this dichotomy comes when you see every year the latest up-and-coming music stars in every genre feel compelled to record their own new arrangements of the traditional Christmas carols. And after all, Christmas is only 1 week before the new year, which we all know is the time where people like to make new resolutions to start new diets, stick to new budgets, endure new exercise, or form new habits. You know, one of the things we miss the most about not living on the prairies is, at least to me, Christmas isn't Christmas without some new and preferably large snowfall to make everything feel all clean and fresh. But come Christmas morning, we'll all gather around a new tree. There's some of us who are unfortunate enough to be saddled with an artificial one. But either way, your tree is almost guaranteed to have at least a few new ornaments and lights added to its collection every year. And when the time comes, we'll exchange new gifts and then don our new clothes and sit around the Christmas table with family and or friends and prepare to make a set of wonderful new memories together. And in the days that follow, we will test out our new gadgets and we will play with our new toys and we will do our very best to ignore the new bills and new pounds we've managed to acquire over the past few weeks. Yes, for all of its traditions, Christmas certainly has its fair share of new elements as well. But you know, that stuff is mostly part of the social and commercial kind of side of Christmas. But it got me wondering if there were spiritual aspects to Christmas that were equally dominated by this concept of newness. So I decided what I should do is take a new look at the Bible and check it out and see. And the first verse that jumped out to me was in Isaiah 43. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? God says, hey, look, I'm doing something new. Don't you see it? In fact, as you read through the Bible, you'll find that God is always making new attempts to reach out to his people. This verse in Isaiah is speaking specifically about freeing the Israelites from Babylon, but it's also a foreshadowing of what God will and now has done for us through Jesus. Now, to examine the story of Jesus, we have to skip forward a little bit from Isaiah to the New Testament. This is a new beginning as God implements his new plan to renew his relationship with all of his children. It starts out with a virgin girl conceiving a child by the Holy Spirit. Now that is a new way of doing things. And 9 months later, as the newlyweds are making their journey to Bethlehem, they arrive and so does their baby, and they place the newborn child in a manger. Shepherds in a nearby field receive a new announcement from the angels, while wise men in the east see a new star, and they follow it to find the child and give him gifts. And that's more or less all we hear for about 30 years until Jesus is ready to enter a new phase in his life. He begins speaking to the people, and immediately they're all amazed at this new teaching, because he sounded like someone who actually knew what he was talking about. He gave his disciples a new command and told them, love one another. And then set a new standard for them by saying, as I loved you, you should love one another. And Jesus came to the blind and the lame and the deaf and even the lepers. And he healed them and gave them new health. He came to Jairus' daughter and the widow's son at Nain, Mary and Martha's brother Lazarus. And though they had all died, he gave them new life, raising them from the grave. And in doing so, Jesus displayed a new kind of power, unlike anything anyone had ever seen before. And power, especially on this kind of scale, creates two things: new followers and new enemies. And as Jesus rode into Jerusalem on a new donkey colt, all the people hailed him as the new king. And in the days that followed, he set up a new memorial for his disciples to remember him by after he was gone. And that time came sooner than any of them thought, because that very night, his enemies came and arrested him and put him through a trial that gave new meaning to the word mockery. And before they knew it, Jesus was hanging on a cross, enduring a new level of torture and pain. And from the cross, he looked down and he saw Mary, his mother, and John, the disciple whom he loved. And he told John that Mary would be his new mother. And he told Mary that John would be her new son. And with his death, Jesus sealed the new covenant between God and man. His disciples took his body to the garden and they laid it in a new tomb. And as the stone was rolled over the entrance and the grave was sealed, the disciples' hearts felt a new depth of sorrow. That was on Friday. But Sunday was a new day. Peter and John ran to the tomb. They found it empty, the grave clothes neatly folded as if they were brand new. Jesus appeared to the disciples, risen and triumphant, filling them with a new hope. He gave them new instructions that they should go to Jerusalem and wait for a new comforter. And when on the day of Pentecost, the Spirit fell on the disciples, the new church was begun. And in days that followed that, and forever since, Jesus' followers have spread a new message. They told people that in Jesus, sins are forgiven, and we can all have a new start. They told people of new life in Christ, of new attitudes in mind, and a new self created by God. They told people that Jesus is the new and living way, that he can provide new freedom and a new birth into a living hope. But the story does not end there, because Jesus also gave us a new promise. He promised that one day he would return, and when he did, there would be a new heaven and a new earth. And in heaven there would be a new city, and the new city would be called the New Jerusalem. And we would all have new bodies and see new glories as we stand in the very presence of God. And we will be filled with a new and inexpressible joy, because there will be a new order. And in that new order there will be no more sickness, sadness, pain, or death. And all of God's people from all the ages will gather around the throne, and together we will sing a new song to the Lamb. And Jesus will stand right among us and declare, "Behold, I am making everything new." So perhaps that is the new story of Christmas. That thanks to this new little baby, we have access to a new covenant with God that gives us new hope, new life, new freedom, and the promise of a new home. And I don't know about